You're listening to the Courageous Life Podcast, helping you develop courage and resilience in a perilous and unpredictable world. This is your host, Sean Mitzel. I'm coming to you from the mountains of northern Idaho. I'm glad you're with us. On today's podcast, we're going to talk about home and family protection. But first, I want to delve into the Indiana controversy for a few minutes. I'm sure that most people that listen to this podcast kind of understand what's happening in Indiana. Let me give you a quick rundown. First, the Indiana legislature came up with what they're calling the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. Okay, Religious Freedom Restoration Act. And that was to provide protections, for example, for the baker who did not want to engage in a same-sex, quote-unquote, marriage ceremony by providing them a wedding cake. Okay, many people have come up with these types of convictions, whether it's a photographer or whatever the case may be, baker, etc., that they did not want to engage in it. They felt like if they provided a cake or took photographs of a same-sex ceremony, a marriage, that they would be participating in it, that they would be somehow, this would be like condoning it. So that was their conviction, and as most people are aware, they're being sued all over this country. They've been fined. They've lost their livelihood, their businesses, florists, bakers, photographers, to name a few. There are examples of each one of those being fined, losing their businesses, etc. Okay, so then comes in the Indiana legislature. These lawmakers came forth and said, hey, we need to put some protections out for our people. Our citizens should have the right to hold to their own beliefs and convictions within a reasonable degree, and then they shouldn't have to be forced to do that, which seems to me is obvious. Now, so the Religious Freedom Restoration Act of Indiana, here's the first point that I really want to drive home here. We are now in an age in the United States of America where it is a necessary thing to have such a thing as the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. Okay, restoration implies that it was lost. And folks, it has been lost to a degree. And a lot of people think, oh, those are isolated incidents. It's just a few here and there. No, this wave, this tsunami is coming. And it's becoming more and more pronounced. So anyway, the Indiana legislature sets forth this Religious Freedom Restoration Act. The governor of Indiana, Mike Pence, says, yes, I will sign it. Absolutely. These small business owners deserve this kind of protection. After all, it is laid out in our Constitution, freedom of religion. You are able to hold to your beliefs. Specifically, I find it ludicrous that Christian beliefs are decried now in the United States, since those are the principles on which this country was founded. But besides the asineity of having a law such as the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, there was much outcry. I mean, you would have thought that Indiana was taking people to the gas chamber for wanting to protect the bakers, the florists, and the photographers. This was discrimination. You had the CEO of Apple saying that he was going to boycott Indiana. He was going to remove new investment from the state, etc. Of course, all at the same time dealing with countries like Saudi Arabia, who actually execute people for being gay, etc. Not a problem there. Not a problem there. New stores in Saudi Arabia? Sure. It's selective conviction on the part of the CEO of Apple and other hypocrites like him. So what we have now in America is not the rule of law, but mob rule. You don't like a law? Hey, you know what? We'll just cry and whine and protest against this until there is so much outcry that we will change it. Oh, and all of this in the name of tolerance, right? So the absolute intolerance in the name of tolerance. So we have literally entered 1984. You have that community, the LGBT community, and all of its friends and supporters, mob ruling over an actual constitutional provision. But you know what? They've won because the Indiana lawmakers have capitulated, which is exactly what they have done. It was too much heat. Their convictions, their principles were not strong enough, and they have caved. And they have created revisions. Now, of course, all this has to go through the state process. But they have announced changes to the because of all the objections to the law, and the purpose of making these changes is to quell widespread criticism from businesses and others. Okay, so again, we have mob rule. We do not have the rule of law. Let's just call it what it is. So these revisions take pretty much any protection that was in the law out of the law. The bottom line is what they should do is they should tear up this law and go home, period. Give it up. Forget it. This doesn't protect anybody's religious freedom. There is no religious freedom in this. So what have they done? Well, the amendment prohibits service providers, meaning the florist, the baker, the photographer, from using the law as a legal defense for refusing to provide services, goods, facilities, or accommodations. Okay, that's everything. That's everything. So if I fail to, hey, look, I'm sorry. I don't want to make a wedding cake for a same-sex ceremony. It goes against my religious convictions. I will be happy to provide you any other cake. I will be happy to give you the names of other businesses who would be more than happy to make you a cake and take your money. But I cannot do that. I mean no disrespect against you, but it would be, I would feel like I am participating in that ceremony. It goes against my fundamental religious beliefs based on my historical Orthodox Christianity positions. No, we can't do that. We will sue you. We will force you out of business. We will fine you. I think you should be jailed. These are all things you hear all the time. Okay, this is from the crowd of tolerance, right? So the crowd of tolerance and inclusivity, who wants Christians to be free, except for when they disagree with them, and then you can't be free. Okay, so continuing on. So you're going to provide your cake. You're going to take pictures. You're going to provide flowers for my same-sex marriage ceremony, because it says here providers cannot refuse service for services, goods, facilities, and accommodations. Okay, it bars all this discrimination based on race, color, religion. Ironic, isn't it? Ancestry, age, national origin, disability, sex, sexual orientation, gender identity, or U.S. military service. Okay, there's no more protection in this law. They should just give it up. Okay, they're probably going to continue to go forward with it because it'll trick some people into thinking that they're somehow restoring religious freedom. Even though they're not, because do you think, based on those provisions, those changes, that somebody is protected from refusing to bake a cake? No, they are not. Absolutely not. And so the legislatures in Indiana have caved. They've all caved to the mob. And it's important to note that as Christians, we must make a stand. You must stand on the truth, regardless of the consequences. People need to stand up. And what's sadder about this is not the caving of the Indiana legislatures. It's a lot of the Christians who are basically telling these florists, bakers, and photographers to just be quiet and just shut up. Just love. Just stop doing what you're doing. You must be quiet. Otherwise, they're not going to like us. Guess what? They don't like you anyway. We must stand on the truth. Okay, that is a fundamental of fundamental importance right now in our nation's history as we enter more and more of this type of tumultuous times that are coming. Okay, we already have Christians being forced out of their business, their livelihoods taken away from them. We have them fined by law. We have mob rule, not rule of law. It's gone. It's important to know that, but it's important to prepare yourself, renew your mind, prepare yourself mentally for what you must do, and that is to stand on the truth. You must stand on the Word of God, period, regardless of cost. It is outrageous, you know. And I'm going to mention one more thing. You see, again, I'm harder on Christians here because you know the secularists that want to suppress you and everything else, they're winning. But they're doing what they do. Okay, that is what they do. They use coercion. They'll use law. They'll use any means necessary to shut you up. But again, what bothers me more is the weakness of professing Christians. The weakness, inability to stand up, make a stand, to proclaim truth. It's, you know, you be quiet, don't say anything, just love people, and they're, you know, then they'll like you. It's not about being liked. But you see all all the support against this law, against what it was anyway, which was a minimalist protection. On professing Christians, and again, it's based on that if we be nice, they'll like us. You know, we just need to be nice. You know, so anyway, stand strong. Stand up for what you believe. Hold to your principles and convictions and proclaim truth. It is needed more now than probably any time in our nation's history. Okay, we are at a crossroads. I think we've actually crossed over. It's just a matter of where are we going to be able to maintain some kind of freedom, okay? Because it's not in Indiana, and it's not in most places in the United States anymore. It's very ironic that the First Amendment to the Constitution is trumped by the mob, and that's where we're at. And make no mistake about it. That we need to be honest about that. And we need to face that and figure out what we're going to do about it. All right, so that concludes the worldview segment for today. And I want to get into the main topic, which is home and family protection. This is very near and dear to my heart. It's important to me. I hope it's important to you. We're going to talk about many aspects of home and family protection. This is not comprehensive. I'm not going to talk about specific equipment, whether it's electronic equipment or firearms, etc. It's more principle based, or more things to think about, just considerations, that kind of thing. So home and family protection is a huge topic. It's a huge topic, and it does involve more than just inside of your home, making sure your doors are locked, and you know, having a dog, etc. There's much more to it. Home and family protection applies not only in your home. It applies when you're out in public. when your kids are at school or whatever. When you're at work, it's about having reasonable plans in place that you can communicate with your loved ones should anything happen, and that you take reasonable precautions against evil that's in the world. Okay? That's an important aspect of home and family protection. So let's start with the home. And I just got done saying that it's more than the home, and it is. But I'd like to start there because I think that's, this is the central place that you should put effort into ensuring that you're making good and sound decisions and that you're taking precautions to protect your home and your family. Because, this is also most in the place where you're going to spend the most time. So one of the assumptions that I'm going to make here is that your home will be armed, okay, and that's with a firearm. So that's one of the assumptions I'm going to make here. Now, if you're not comfortable with a firearm, my recommendation is to get comfortable with a firearm. If you are not allowed to have a firearm wherever you are, my recommendation is to move, because I think that it is a reasonable thing to be able to be armed with a firearm in your home, in your castle. Okay, so that's my assumption. Now, I want to talk about how do you look at everything that's going on, and then what do you prepare for? What are you protecting against? I mean, do you create a moat around your house and put alligators in there and set up electric fences and mined causeways and sentry posts? Okay, well, we have to look at some aspects of preparing, right? Because we do know that criminal elements exist. We do know that there is a wide degree of things that could happen in your home, all the way from simple burglary, or someone's trying to steal something from your yard or garage or in your home, to the home invader, that knows people are home and they're going to go in, take over the home, and do whatever it is that they're planning on doing. Okay, so those are kind of, I want to say that the kind of the extreme ends on what you should prepare for. Okay, so it doesn't make any sense if you don't think anything is going to happen. I mean, if you literally think nothing is going to happen, and so you don't prepare at all, you leave all your doors unlocked, windows open, because nothing ever happens in your neighborhood. Well, I think that's a little bit naive. I think you owe it to your family to at least take precautions against that simple burglar. Okay, so how can we think about this? Let's think about this in, when we look at the possible, and then we can look at the probable. All right, what is possible? And then we can determine, because when we look at what is possible, anything is possible, right? An armed gang could enter your home and take over your house, kill everybody inside, and then use that as their staging area for all their criminal mastermind activities. Okay, that is possible, but it's not very probable. Okay, is it possible for an armed home invader to come into your home and say, steal all your goods, and force you to, come up with all your valuables, and maybe do something even worse, like commit rape or something like that. That is possible. Now, is it probable? I don't know. You need to look at your area or anything else. Now, I will tell you right now, for me, I prepare against that. To me, that's the standard. That's what I'm preparing for. Okay, do I think it's actually all that probable? No, I don't. But what I'm trying to get to here is this: you're going to prepare for whatever is in the. Not only you're going to balance between the possible and the probable. But then, whereas your risk tolerance or your level of where you want to be. I mean, I think we'd all like to be able to protect and defend against everything that's possible. You know, prepare for everything that's possible. We just can't do that. It's not feasible to do that. So what is probable? You know, again, you look at your area, a petty crime maybe, that's people stealing things out of yards. It's the small-time criminal looking for the easy target, maybe doing some, like I said, trying to steal things, simple burglary. They're looking for people who aren't home or appear not to be home. Okay, that's probably a lot more probable, a lot more likely. For me, that does not go far enough. So let me tell you a couple of real events that have happened to me over the years that have kind of led me down to the importance of home and family protection. Okay, so first event was this was like 1993. My wife and I, we didn't have any kids at this point. I think we were about to have our first child. My sister-in-law was visiting, and we lived in this little, kind of a duplex, quadplex type thing. This little, neighborhood. Think of these little postage stamp, duplexes and quadplexes with paper-thin walls, et cetera. Not the greatest of neighborhoods, but that's what we could have afford. So I'm at work. My wife is out doing something. My sister-in-law was at home alone. Okay, all we had at that time, we did have a firearm. We had a Ruger 10/22. That's it. That's what I had. That's what I could afford. Well, I showed her just very basically, hey, this is how you do that. Not thinking anything could ever happen. And so she's at home alone in this little quadplex type thing. And all of a sudden she hears noise at the back door. She hears, jiggling. This is the middle of the day. No cars are there. So there was obviously an assumption that nobody was home. So the jiggling at the back door, my sister-in-law grabs the gun and kind of stands off. Probably doesn't really know that well anyway of how to operate the firearm. I probably showed her, but again, until you practice and train, it's unrealistic to think that she could effectively employ it. Anyway, door opens, guy starts walking in the back, clearly wanting to rob the place, not understanding that somebody was there. She simply points the gun at him and yells something. I don't even remember what. He turns around, takes off, and leaves. Okay, she shuts the door, relocks it. I'm not even sure how he unlocked it or picked it or whatever. But that's simply having that firearm and having it pointed at him made him go away, which is a great thing. Okay, that's incident number one. Incident number two. We live in a different place. We live in a trailer because, again, this is all we can afford. This was like a year later. And this was a really rough neighborhood, but it's what we could afford. We had two dogs at the time. We had it doesn't really matter. We had two dogs. They were both really young dogs, puppies, really. We had those dogs for home and family protection as a warning and an intimidation and just basically home protection. We were driving home. Again, this is like a trailer park. You got to go down this bumpy dirt road that has not been maintained, and you get to the trailer park. I come around the corner. I'm about 100 yards from my trailer, and I see somebody pushing my motorcycle out of my yard. Okay, I had a motorcycle, and it was inside of a little chain link fence in my yard. I see, through in the lights, is at night, somebody pushing my motorcycle out of my yard. So I hit the brights, I punch it, start driving really fast towards that person. Again, I'm about 100 yards away. They drop the bike, they run off to the woods, and off we go. Okay, so again, somebody trying to steal something, what they feel is an easy pick. All right, so that was incident number two. All right, so incident number three, which was the most serious and the most troubling. In that same trailer, and this happened several months later. By the way, we eventually moved. As soon as we could, we moved. But we weren't able to at this time. I was in the Marine Corps and I was in the field, so I was gone. So Monica was home alone. And let me just think. Okay, no children still at this point. Two small dogs in the trailer. All right, so there's two doors. The front door locks. Two dogs inside. She's still got that same, Ruger 10/22. She knows how to use it a little bit better than my sister-in-law. We've had an opportunity to go shoot a little bit. But still, she's probably not super proficient at this point, but I really am confident that she could have pulled the trigger, which would have been, fortunately, it wasn't necessary, and as you'll soon hear. Okay, now our front door locks, our back door does not lock. It does not lock, which is, a terrible thing. So what did I do? I had it rigged. I had a like webbing around the door tied to something else to where you couldn't open it. Okay, so it was bound shut, but it didn't actually lock. There was no mechanism, locking mechanism or deadbolt or anything like that that worked. Okay, so there's somebody now, this is at night, late at night. Monica hears something kind of, moving around at the back door. So she sees the jiggling. She gets the gun and stands well back and calls 911. Says, "Hey, there's somebody trying to get in the back door." The dogs are barking. Okay, and again, they're still young. They're very young dogs. There's not a whole lot they could do, but they were making a lot of noise and barking at the door and doing a good job of warning. Okay, now, if you're a criminal at this point, you hear somebody clearly up and about, and there's two dogs barking at the entrance that you're trying to get into. What do you do as a criminal? Do you leave? Well, the vast majority of criminals would leave. This person's still trying to get in. Okay, that should tell you something. Still trying to get in. I mean, like working hard to get in. My wife yells out, "I have a gun. And if you come in, I will shoot." Okay, and again, she's still talking with the police online or dispatchers or whatever it was. She tells the police, "Hey, there's somebody trying to get in the back door. They won't leave. I've got a gun, and it's trained on that door." And so they say, "Okay, we'll send out cops." Well, so this person keeps trying for a little bit, and which is a scary thing if somebody keeps trying to include somebody, with dogs and with somebody that says, "I have a gun and I will shoot," and they're still trying to get in. Okay, and I've called the police, still trying to get in. Okay, well, eventually, after a minute or two, this criminal leaves. Cops show up. So I don't know if this was a, I don't know, I still suspect that maybe. I don't know. There was some kind of signal or something that cops were coming. So it was like right as the cops are showing up a little bit, just maybe 30 seconds before the cops show up, this guy leaves. Cops show up. She says, "Hey, this is what happened." She's standing outside with a gun and dogs and talking to the cops and say, it says this person was trying to get in, even with me telling them I have a gun, even with dogs barking. So they go look around the area and, you know, move, put their spotlights out there, etc., find nothing. And they say, okay, well, there's nothing, so we're out of here. And she's like, okay. So she buttons everything back up. Fortunately, all that webbing held, and they go away. So of course she's freaked out by this time, and rightly so. And this person comes back. No kidding. This person comes back and starts trying to get back in that back door. Dogs barking again. I've got a gun. I will shoot you. Calls the cops again and says he's back. They take like 20 minutes to get back out to him. There's an important lesson right there, folks, is that the police cannot get to you in, you know, in maybe in some cases they can get to you in a few minutes. Okay, think about what can happen in a few minutes. Okay, but in this case it was 20 minutes. She's standing there with two little puppies and a 22, and this person's trying to get in. Cops show back up finally. Person runs back off, and she's like, okay, you guys wait, I'm out of here. She takes the dogs, takes her gun, gets in our car and leaves and goes to a friend's house. I don't even remember what. But my point in sharing these three stories with you is these are things that we probably in most of our lives would think, that's not going to happen, but they do happen. And that third incident could have been terrible. If that webbing wouldn't have held, if she wouldn't have had a firearm, you know, those two puppies weren't going, they did a great job of warning, but they weren't going to stop somebody who was motivated to get in to do whatever it is that he wanted to do, which is quite obvious, I think, what he wanted to do. But unfortunately was not able to do that. This is why home and family protection is so important to me. I don't take it lightly. I don't go, oh yeah, this neighborhood, you don't even have to lock your doors or anything. That is complacency talking. That's what that is. That's why it's important to me. Plus, I believe that you have an obligation to protect your family and do what you can, what is reasonable. Take reasonable precautions. I'm not saying go crazy. But these are reasonable precautions to ensure the safety of your family. Okay, so at this point, hopefully I've convinced you that you should do these things, or at least some of these things for home and family protection. So what a lot of people might do at this point is start with, you know, the outside and working your way in and talking about, hey, how do I make myself a hard target? How do I deter those burglars, deter those that would do your family harm? What I actually want to do is start with something a little bit more severe, and that is the home invasion. And I want to talk about that, and we will eventually work ourselves out to things like fences and dogs and security lighting and electronic measures and passive measures and active measures and physical barriers, etc. But I want to talk about the home invasion and kind of what you should do inside the home if something like this were to occur. So if you think of that number three scenario, somebody except for that person gets in. Okay, so if that person in that trailer would have broken through the back door, what would have been the proper response of my wife? Up into the point of shooting to eliminate the threat. Okay, so the first thing I want to say for most people who are not highly trained or anything else, these are, and even if you are highly trained, these are all great principles, right? I don't think anybody, you know, relishes or is looking forward to or wants to take another human life. I don't care how terrible that person is. You know, there's a cost to you, even if you were completely and utterly justified legally, morally, and everything else There is a cost. Okay, so we want to try and avoid that if we can. It doesn't mean that we wouldn't do that. Okay, the part of this is being mentally prepared to defend yourself and your family with a firearm or any other weapon of opportunity should the need arise. Should someone else make that decision for you, then you need to be prepared to do that. But the first thing I want you to think about is evading the home invader. If the home invader breaks through your front door, where are you going to go? What are you going to do? Have you talked to your kids about something like that? If they hear chaos, what is their first reaction? And with all of this, you have to run drills. Yes, you should run drills for home and family protection. I don't care if we're talking about fire drills or home invader type drills. Okay? This is important stuff. So evasion. And I don't mean evading through the woods or something like that, like some kind of a horror movie. I mean evading away from the person breaking in. If you hear somebody breaking in, there's lots of things that you can do to try and deter them from continuing to come in. And I'm not suggesting, go hide in the farthest room in the house and just hope that he goes away. It might be something as simple as flicking on a light that could cause this person to flee. It could be something as calling out a warning that you may or may not want to do, depending on the situation. If they were outside of my house trying to get in, then I think this would be a good tactic. If they're already on the inside, then that you need to weigh that out a little bit more. If you're trying not to lose the element of surprise, or maybe you're going to call out and get them to try and leave. But evading, getting away. If you're in a situation, you want to put as much space and as many rooms as possible between your family and this invader. Okay? Just a quick philosophical discussion on what it is that you are able to protect, or what should you protect with, say, lethal force. Should you protect your truck out in the driveway with lethal force? I don't think so. I don't think so. Now, I'm not going to fault, I wouldn't fault anyone for going out and confronting anyone. But the reality is that a lot of people have been killed doing things like that that didn't need to be killed. It is a vehicle. It's a vehicle. Now they come in your home against your warning, and clearly the people are home, and clearly looking to do harm to your family. Lethal force is an absolutely an option. You have that inherent right, not given by any state, to defend yourself and your family. Period. Now, most, at least in the United States, most states have pretty good, not every state, but most states have pretty good, quote unquote, castle doctrine laws. Okay? Essentially that, hey, if you have every right to defend your family and your property, you have that right, especially in your home. Somebody invades your home, they have breached your castle. You have the right to defend that castle. Now, again, do I want to take human life over property? No, I don't. I don't want to do that. But that is an individual decision, and I'm not saying that you wouldn't be legally upheld to do that. Again, if somebody is entering my home, and I don't know that, okay, what they're really after is the TV. Lethal force might be prescribed. It might be the right course of action. Okay, so I am not saying that you're not within your rights to defend your property. You are. I'm just saying that the psychological cost of taking a life is high, and it's heavy, and it's something that we should not take lightly or be looking to do. Okay, there was one case that where a man was severely frustrated, and I can sympathize with him to some degree, is that people kept stealing stuff out of his garage. They broke into his garage on like two or three occasions, and they just kept coming back. And he fixed the lock on the garage door, usually like the side door. And they did it, and they did it, and did it. And what he ended up doing is he ended up baiting them. He left his garage door open on purpose, and sure enough, somebody came in there, and he he shot and killed that burglar. Okay, I get it. He was really frustrated, and that was a terrible thing. But here's where he went terribly wrong. Besides obviously setting out or premeditating the taking of a human life. Okay, there's no doubt this guy that was coming in was a scumbag, and it was probably the same guy over and over again, or the same group over and over again. But again, do we want to take human life over stuff? Well, he did that, but what the problem is that he was bragging about it. It's like, you know what? I'm sick and tired of this, and I'm gonna get this guy. And he was bragging about this on social media, and he ended up getting convicted, even though, like, if none of that was said, none of that was done, he would have been in his right to defend his property. But it was premeditated, and he baited this person, and he ended up going to prison. Okay, so we want to be careful about that. We do want to protect our stuff, absolutely. I don't care. I would. There's things that you can do. There's monitoring. There's cameras. There's dogs. There's even catching this guy and holding him with a firearm. I don't care. Run an electric fence and zap the guy. Whatever. Do what you have to do to protect your property. No doubt about it. But we should be very careful about the taking of human life. Even the fallen thug is made in the image of God, so we need to be careful with that. I'm not saying that there wouldn't be a time to take life, because there are justified times to do that. But we need to be careful, very careful. Okay, so evade. We want to put in as many rooms, as many corners between the bad guy and your family as possible. All right, this is an important aspect. You don't want to put yourself in more danger. So if evading is going to put yourself in more danger, it's better to stay put. Okay. And some quick talk about moving through a home with a firearm. And it goes without saying here, I think that everybody should get training and should be basically have continuous training, and you're continually working with a firearm if you're going to have one for home and family protection. Moving through a home, you're actually putting yourself at a, and I'm not talking about the trained team that does this for a living. You as an individual or a semi-trained person are putting yourself at a disadvantage by moving through a home. Okay? Now, there may be times to do that. If you have to move to, say, a children's room, or to get to somebody, I totally get it. I understand that. You need to be very careful here. You're putting yourself at a disadvantage with the home invader by moving through a home. If you can stay stationary and put space between you and the home invader, you have an advantage. If the invader comes to you, you are at the point of advantage. Okay, the defender has the advantage in a home situation. All right, so evade. Think about that. You need to come up with plans. What are your kids going to do if, is there a word that comes out if there's any type of chaos that starts to ensue? What is it that your reaction that your kids are going to do? This should be talked about. This should be practiced. Do you have a space? I'm not talking about a panic room or something that's a steel metal area. Although I think it's a perfectly reasonable thing to set a specified room, and maybe you do something as simple as putting a little bit more solid of a door on that room, as opposed to your interior hollow core doors that can be easily kicked through or pried open with almost nothing, or just overcome very easily. I think that's a perfectly reasonable thing to do. That everybody knows, hey, if something happens, everybody automatically goes to this location. Okay? And why? To barricade yourself into a safer position. Again, if somebody breaks in, and we're talking about the home invasion here, knowing that there are people there, they mean no good. Okay, whatever it is their motive is, whether it's money or things or stuff or people, they mean no good. Okay, so someone willing to commit that kind of a crime should not be underestimated and needs to be taken very seriously. Okay, so that would be the second thing is barricades. We had evade and we have barricade. You know, you have that room with that solid door with the removal of the regular screws and the insertion of the 3-inch screws, something very simple like that can give you time. Okay, and that's what's key. If you have a firearm and your entire family's in this room that's barricaded, and you're on the phone and police are on their way and they say, hey, there's somebody in the house, you know, yada yada yada, and this person's trying to get through your door. Okay, this barricaded door, guess who's got the advantage? You do. Hopefully you have it, you're trained, you have a firearm with plenty of capacity, but you have the advantage here. Okay, he's coming through your door. He's having a, you know, a harder time getting through. It's not a hollow core door. He thinks he's just going to kick through. He's not going to do that. He's going to have to work at it. If he's that motivated, then obviously lethal force is going to be required in a situation like that. That's clear cut. It's not always clear cut like that. But you've taken every precaution. You've done everything reasonable. You have evaded. You have barricaded yourself and your family into a quote unquote safe area. And this person is still trying to come through. He has made that decision plain and clear. No questions about it. Nobody's going to question you, even though you might have been justified shooting this person coming through a window. This person is clearly out to do ill will against you, and you have taken every reasonable precaution. Okay, now the next thing is that I hope that I've made this clear is that you are armed. This is why I think firearms are the great equalizer. Your size, your strength, your physical factors, whether you're injured or not, a firearm in almost every case overcomes all of these disadvantages you may have with this invader. Not only that you have a firearm, that you have the skill to use it. All right, it does no good to have a firearm that you don't even know what the condition of it is. You're not sure if it would even shoot because you haven't cleaned it or shot it in 2 years. This is something that you should know the status of the weapon. You should be trained in the weapon, and hopefully you have trained with it and shot it sometime in the last, you know, month or two at the least.
This concludes today's podcast. Thanks for listening. Please visit us on our website, thecourageouslifepodcast.com. We would appreciate any comments or questions that you have. And also like us on Facebook, The Courageous Life Podcast. Semper Fidelis and Soli Deo Gloria.